When you think about it, the art of curation is the art of narrowing down choice. Curators select certain things over others to tell a story, to convey a point of view, or simply to give a shortcut to the best stuff out there. People could be curating information, art, music, sneakers, you name it. In other words, when we talk about curation, our minds usually go to the what. What is the thing being curated? But in an era of overabundance, my guest today says that what is being curated isn't as important as how those things are discovered, contextualized, and shared. What is the connection between curation and community? How can these things work together for a better, more useful approach? What is the art of curating the curators, and where does trust fit into all of this? That's in today's interview. Welcome to The Art of Curation, the show from Flipboard that explores the role of human taste in a tech-driven world. Each episode, we talk to someone who's an expert at finding signal in the noise, people who do this for a living in media, tech, fashion, music, and more. I'm your host, Mia Qualiarello. Like you, I get overwhelmed by the sheer amount of content out there. I crave authentic people to guide me in making smart choices that make my life better. People with taste, the real kind. Today's guest is Sari Azoot, a seed stage investor, design thinker, product strategist, and storyteller. Sari is the founder of Startup UWorld, a community curated knowledge graph, and she's a thought leader in this space. Sari believes we've only just scratched the surface of what it means to curate and share content. She's interested in how these systems are made and in building a new model for curation, one that focuses on utility over entertainment. Sari says her life's work is about accelerating the reach of interesting ideas, and this conversation is a great look into how she's thinking about that. I really love how you articulate a vision for curation's place in the world and how we consume and find information where it's all headed. And I wanted to jump right into it with what I think is one of your more radical ideas, which is that when it comes to curation, it's less important to focus on the what, and it's more important to think about the structure of how that content is consumed, contextualized, and shared.
Yeah, I think it's a somewhat controversial taste, right? Because I mean, curation, if you think about it, it's not a new phenomenon. It's always been around us. Walmart is a curator of physical goods. You could think of like ETFs really are like curators of financial securities, like Trader Joe's, they curate food. And so really like curation is about the act of narrowing down choice into the things that you believe people will want or should want, or things that are relevant. I think what's changed is that in like conditions of extreme abundance, which is what's happening today, what we're seeing, and I'm also very interested in curation of content, especially like the world of like more intellectual content. What's happening is that curation outside of, say, retail or a bookstore is really about entertainment. It's not about utility. And so, you know, if I'm having like, I don't know, a hard time with my 2-year-old, he's throwing a tantrum, I can Google search for tips on managing a tantrum, but that's not going to yield like good results. It's just a bunch of SEO optimized garbage. The fact that I follow a ton of Instagram like parenting accounts does not mean that it's going to give me like on demand the answer that I'm looking for from a human. And so we sort of have like defaulted to curation in the form of chats and, you know, little communities and Telegram groups. But I'm really interested in this idea that, you know, we should be able to structure all of the knowledge and wisdom that we have across topics and categories into formats that are conducive for not just entertainment, but for real utility. So yeah, I've been sort of like fascinated by what that looks like, because it seems like on the internet, when we think of curation, Instagram is curation, Twitter is curation, but it's all just like feeds of content that sort of like feel pretty ephemeral. How often do people go back and revisit the things that they've sort of seen in the past? The platforms are not really conducive to that kind of behavior.
I'm so curious about the interplay between human and algorithmic in finding the good stuff and surfacing the good stuff. What's your take on what can humans do that an algorithm will never be able to replace?
Yeah, I mean, I am not like a maximalist of like, you know, we cannot have an algorithm. Like the reality is that there's very easy to look at Facebook and Twitter and whatever and say like, oh, you know, they're just like evil trying to maximize engagement. The reality is they all started with chronological feeds and they transitioned to algorithmic feeds for a reason. I think a couple things. Like the first is that algorithms are typically great at showing you average things, but not necessarily exceptional things. Like there are a lot of exceptional things that are lower TAM. And so I think that in many ways, like it's very easy to like succumb to the tyranny of averages with algorithms. I think that contextual relevance is very hard for machines. I think at, you know, at Startupy with what we're building, we think of tags because we do a lot of like auto tagging, combination of both like manual and auto tagging. I see them as units of meaning. And so some essay that I read might make me think of having a meaning crisis, even though there is nothing in the essay that like directly mentions that term. And so I think humans are like uniquely equipped to address meaning, to connect the dots across things for algorithms, for some of the reasons I mentioned. That said, like as we think about building Startupy, like we think about the supply of content should come from humans that have determined that something is worth reading and have taken the time to curate, collect it, store it. How you discover that content, there are like multiple pathways to discovery, but some of them will be algorithmic. Like the moment that you have some sort of like sort and ranking behavior, there is implicitly an algorithm. I think how you design those algorithms, you know, is very indicative of the, you know, the business model, the things that matter. And a lot of the algorithms that are designed today are, you know, designed to maximize a certain kind of type of content or behavior. But I think it's interesting that we sort of live in a world where we went from top-down elites that were tastemakers, the celebrity sort of like web one, two world to now we're sort of like in this numbers driven, like viral creator ecosystem where algorithmic feeds basically tell you what you like to see. And TikTok is the best example of this where there's like the app is super useful without a social graph. And I think that we just need an alternative to some of these systems. Like we just need more choice around how we discover content, the interfaces through which we you know, find information are just incredibly important for humanity. And I just think we need more choice as far as how these systems are designed.
You published this great Venn diagram that you made of curation in one circle, knowledge management in another, and community in another with a big I in the middle. And I assume that I is Startupy. And so for people who don't know what you're building, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, to take a step back, like my sort of life's work and my mission has always been to accelerate the reach of interesting ideas. I think that we're all sort of here in this world to acquire and share knowledge. And I just personally love hanging out at the edges of the internet, discovering interesting content and sharing it. It's pretty amazing to me, actually, that link sharing is such a sort of native behavior, but there's no dedicated platform on the internet for you to share the sort of like links and bookmarks that resonate with you. So, you know, Pinterest is great for like visual mood boarding if you're building a house or, you know, getting married. And, you know, Instagram is great for photos of your kids. But to me, there's sort of this like gap where, what about like the content that makes like my soul sing, the essay on personal development, the thing I read on the future of work, the real like insights that are sort of like written by amazing, like experienced people that are not SEO optimized because the best writers are not really thinking about SEO optimization. And so when I think about this, I think a lot of this behavior of organizing links is happening in either single player tools, like a lot of knowledge management tools like Roam or MyMind or just like a bunch like Notions or Airtable databases, which is where I started. And you know, some of them are shareable, but there's no network. It's people are curating and oftentimes like share loose links on Discord chats. And this is like, or you could argue, that's the knowledge management piece. The community piece is really interesting because when I think about, you know, maybe I'm trying to hire someone and I want to find like the most interesting insights around, you know, what to ask in an interview. I could try to Google that and I'm going to get like, you know, indeed.com, like SEO manufactured garbage. I could ask in a forum or chat group, but that feels like reinventing the wheel. A lot of people don't do that. I could ask my Twitter followers. Most people don't really, have the reach for that. I could ask friends and people I know, but what if you could find, like, be able to search across people's sort of bookmarks and highlights? It would just be a much more human, and you'd be accelerating the path to the real quality insights that, in my opinion, are buried on the internet. So I guess all this to say, when I think about that Venn diagram of community, curation, and knowledge management, I sort of feel like a lot of the curation and knowledge management is happening in single player tools. And it'd be a lot more powerful to combine that, to combine the richness and the utility of all of these tools with a more networked discovery and like communal approach to building knowledge. So it's startup-y. We sort of like to think that a lot of what we're building, and we're still super early days, is a tool that allows you to curate the links on the internet that that resonate, but have all of that curation work, that your notes, your highlights, your links contribute to a larger body of knowledge that then becomes like searchable.
That's so cool. Is this available publicly for people to check out?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing I'll do is like acknowledge the gap between where we are and where we want to be. So yes, we are in private beta. It's the URL is startup-y.world. We have about 200 curators in our private beta right now. There is a search engine. Essentially, the way this came to be is I was nurturing this Airtable database for years. Every time I came across something interesting, I would add it. I would add my notes on it, my highlights. I would interconnect it, tag it by topics, tag people. And it sort of became this like really sort of rich, associative, interconnected knowledge base. And it sort of dawned on me that this would be a lot more powerful in a collaborative setting. And it sort of like graduated from fascination to side project to now like a real sort of company. Yeah, I think we have like a very sort of like early rough draft manifestation of this vision, but we're working really hard to close the gap between where we are and where we want to be. But to be clear, if you were to go on Startup-y today across a bunch of topics where, you know, we are really sort of like starting with tech, business, personal development, culture, but across topics like the creator economy, the future of publishing, the curation economy, even, you could search across those topics on Startup-y. You're going to see a curated repository of like really interesting links and highlights. And because it's like super deeply linked, you could also maybe like search for specific creators. So for example, Gabby Goldberg, who I know you've had on the podcast, there, you know, a lot of like content is now scattered across platforms. So podcasts, tweets, Substack, et cetera. And so a lot of the sort of like end result of having this community of curators is that they're curating content across platforms. It's completely platform agnostic. And so if you were to like search for Gabby Goldberg's profile on Startup-y, you would see some of her best content with like the top highlights, some of her best tweets, some of the best pieces she's mentioned in. And so in some ways, like the byproduct of a lot of this like single player curation is this like more collective knowledge graph that's very like human first. It's based on like humans found this relevant.
Well, how are you curating the curators?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think that today we curate the curators. So, you know, there's an application. It's pretty easy to discern based on the questions if we feel like they fit the sort of tone that we're setting for the early community. I do think that over time, anyone should be able to contribute to this graph. And we would take like the quality of what appears when you were, for instance, were to search for a topic, say like future of work or something else, there's still going to be some sort of like ranking algorithm. So in the same way, it's just not going to be based on domain authority and SEO garbage. So on Startup-y, you can imagine if 20 people curate the same link, if a link is favorited by a ton of people, if somebody who has authored a bunch of pieces on a given topic likes another piece on that topic, you can assign like weights to things based on real signals of human relevance. So, you know, we definitely don't want to scale Startup-y as if our taste was definitive. Like, sure, you can follow me on Startup-y and it's people first. If you just want to search maybe, you know, what has Sari curated on the sort of like meditation topic or something like that, you can do that. So there is like a follow graph, but you could also consume media by topic and have like all sorts of filters around relevance.
Gabby also talked about this on the podcast about how tastemaking is now trickle up and really cool hunters can come from anywhere and they can build a platform, you know, through many means. What do you think are the pros and cons of this?
Ah, oh, that's such a good question. I don't think I've ever been asked that. Yeah, I mean, I think the pros are the obvious ones. It democratizes access to information. I think that it's super interesting to think about like COVID as an example, where a lot of the people that sort of like became experts that really sort of like knew what was going on are not the sort of like gatekeepers or the like people we would traditionally consider experts. So there's definitely like a leveling of the playing field. Like an untrained data scientist with zero experience in infectious diseases, I think became known as like the like best expert in COVID-19. So I think there's something really powerful about that. I think that misinformation is obviously a big issue. And I think that it's very easy as we think about like citizen journalism and things like that to discount the power of, say, like, for example, things like investigative journalism. Those things need a lot of funding. And, a lot of like media that sort of like required a centralized coordination, we're just seeing less of as a result of the way that people are just sharing like bite-sized like tweets on the internet versus like going on a 6-month thing to focus on like on something that's like potentially higher impact. But ultimately, I think that we sort of like are going from a place from a world where it's like who you know matters to what you know matters, and now it's like it's more important to build something, to write something, to share something than to know people. I always say, like, having spent a lot of time writing a Substack newsletter in the last couple of years, that writing, and I think it you could substitute writing for sharing, creating, is networking for introverts. And I just think that like opens up just a huge amount of surface area for a lot of people that would have otherwise not seen the light of day.
Part of your thesis is that in a world of infinite information, it's no longer important enough to organize the world's information, but it's really important to organize the world's most trustworthy information. And you've just touched on this, but what kind of checks and balances do you put in place to make sure that your curators and your ecosystem are trustworthy and the content that they're curating is also trustworthy?
Yeah, this is such a like loaded question and also like a very, very difficult problem to solve, because what does trust mean? And so I think there's no easy answer. I will say, I think the vast majority of content online, like people, like very few people ask, like, is this a good teacher? The way that a lot of like, say Twitter, because it happens to be the platform that I use the most. When I see a tweet that feels like a hot take on something, it's divorced from context because it just feels like a contrarian take, but I'm not seeing the context. It's sort of like prioritizing ideas that fit into however many characters you're allowed to put in the tweet. And so it's, to me, it's less about saying this is trustworthy, this isn't, but about designing interfaces where sense making can happen. Because if you show things with more context, here's a tweet, but here's something related, here's a different perspective on the same topic. If you could sort of allow people to put all of these things in one place, I don't think the world is black or white. I think the world is all shades of gray, and I don't think that platforms should be arbiters of like what is trustworthy. But I think we have a responsibility to design interfaces where that are designed for sense making, that sort of like understand the nuances around like knowledge and surface like context, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Do you think anyone's doing this well right now?
Ooh. Yeah, it's interesting. I think that there, if like for nerdy intellectuals on the internet, there are a ton of tools that are designed for sense making. There's the whole space has been given the name Tools for Thought. And so there's a ton of people thinking about Tools for Thought. I think that a lot of that thinking is helping single player environments. Like if you're a researcher and you have a ton of information, there's some like interesting emerging tools that can help you make sense of all of that. I don't think we have enough collective tools for sense making. I also think that it's not about like whether people, whether platforms are doing this well or not. I think in general, like there are so many ways that we can organize exchange, knowledge exchange on the internet. And I think we've only scratched the surface. And I just think we need more choice because you think of like Twitter as a platform, it's designed for ideas that can fit in like a small text box. And that like rules out a ton of ideas. It's also designed for things that you feel are going to be popular because the like button means that you're sort of like putting everything to a popularity test. And so that's just like a very specific way to design interaction and knowledge exchange online. Now, I'm not saying it's good or bad. I think for the most part, a lot of these platforms have been, like really incredible. I just think we need more choices and more ways to organize that knowledge. Because if you don't have a like button or you design the sort of like system differently, you're going to get all sorts of different results. And so I guess what I'm advocating for is just more choice and more ways. Because I think we've just scratched the surface of what it means to sort of curate and share content.
And when you curate, you're of course saying something about your own taste. And you know, you started one essay about talking about the business of good taste, and that's the content itself. What even is good taste in your opinion?
Ooh, such a good question. it's interesting because I do think like in some ways, like taste is subjective. I think that is there like a definitive, like this person has good taste and bad taste? Like, I don't know. I also think there's a difference between someone being able to tell whether something is good and someone being able to make that thing. So I can have really good taste in movies. Like this is a really great movie, but it doesn't mean I can make a good movie. And that's where I think there's a huge opportunity for sort of a new creator class of curators, because curators are not necessarily creators. They're just people that can sort of like, sort through the noise and find that needle in a haystack. I don't know that I have a good answer for, can everyone cultivate good taste? But ultimately, it's about narrowing down choice for people and showing people what they want in a sea of like infinite content and in a world of infinite complexity.
And who thrives in this curator economy? Like, what qualities make someone really good at this?
Yeah, I'm trying to like describe like what my process is, because I consider myself a curator. I think being like not in some ways like looking at the vast like reserves of content on the internet. So it's not just about trends or whatever is new and valuable today. I personally think that a lot of the problem with the internet today is the recency bias, and everything's about what happened in the last 24 hours. And so being able to just like sort through and make connections and synthesize, I think that synthesis and the ability to connect the dots across like seemingly unrelated things is really like a huge and important quality. And I do think like some people are just like better suited for that because that's how their brains think. So I think that in this world, like people that can make connections across different things will really thrive.
How important is, do you think, that the person is adept at writing and creating original content?
Yeah, I don't think it's that important. I think that back to like what I was saying earlier, I think that people can have good taste, but not necessarily like the skills. So you can like detect like really good writing. You can connect the dots across, a lot of really different interesting things, but you wouldn't necessarily have the skills to write those things or create those things in the first place. I do think that the act of curation should not be limited to just, hey, like, let me reshare interesting things. I think it's about the context, what, you know, how you nest those things together. You know, in a museum, it's not just about, let me choose like a bunch of great art pieces and put them in one place. It's about like what story they tell by being placed next to each other. And so I think curation is like deeply tied to context. And so I don't think you necessarily need to create, but you definitely need to be able to create the right context for those ideas to live together.
I'm so curious about your life as a curator. What tools and rituals are in your toolkit?
I wish I could say that I like have this like crazy productivity stack. Like the reality is that I think what's unique about me and what Substack and my experience writing for Substack and, you know, curating a newsletter and writing original content is that the moment that you go from I am a consumer of the internet to I'm a curator of the internet, because you have an outlet where you are sharing the things that resonate with you. You have a way to sort of share your digital resonance trail. I think your mindset changes, because everything that you're seeing and coming across is an opportunity to add to your archive, to share with others. And so I just think that the mindset of being a curator on the internet is very different from just like passively scrolling and doom scrolling across platforms. So I think the most important like part of my curation journey is like just how magical it is to change my experience with the internet from one where I'm just like passively consuming to one where I'm just collecting. And that collecting is ultimately serving others. In terms of how I do this, so for a very long time, I had this like really crazy Airtable database that I was using. And so every time I stumbled upon something interesting, if I was on my desktop, I would like dump it right into my Airtable. If I was on my phone, I would like email myself a link to revisit later. So again, like no, like super old school. I know there are a ton of like really complex tools for this stuff, but I've kept it pretty simple. And nowadays I do this collectively with the Startup Bee curator community. I add stuff to Startup Bee every day, but you know, we like to say that like our mission at Startup is to accelerate the spread of interesting ideas. And we do this by building tools to help humans collectively curate the internet. So yeah, there's a ton of stuff that we're building now to really help people go from like, here's a thing that resonates, that inspired me, to put it in this like collective knowledge graph with all of the proper sort of context and tags and structure.
Of course, there are the things that Starry likes, and then there's Startup Bee, the brand. And sometimes those two things might not always fit together. So how would you recommend that a curator balance like their own interests, especially if they work for a brand, their own identity versus what the brand needs to convey?
Yeah, it's so interesting because I think like in some ways, like we're witnessing this diminishing trust in institutions and traditional media. And I think people will always be more drawn to people. And so like for Startup Bee, initially, like I was curating the Startup Bee weekly newsletter, and I tried to make it about like the Startup Bee newsletter. And I've sort of like gone back to saying like, yes, this is a Startup Bee newsletter, but it's written by me, Sari, and to sort of like humanize the brand. And so I just think that like people are drawn to people, and, you know, brands need to have personality. And there needs to be feel like there's like a human, behind that. And so, yeah, I don't know, like, yeah, how we'll address this over time. I think Sari will be a node within Startup Bee. You could go to my profile and see everything that I've curated. And then, you know, it's up to like the Startup Bee community to see how that evolves. But I think that, you know, if I were, you know, a brand, I would really like empower the people working inside that brand to build personalities themselves within that brand, versus trying to, just have like a brand voice. Like brands are made of people.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, which curators do you admire and why?
I'm really... have like a bit of an obsession with Molly Mielke. She's on Twitter, and I just love everything that she writes and shares. Bree Wolfson is also amazing. She's a Startup Bee curator, and she just has like amazing curations on like organizational design and just a bunch of topics that I'm really interested in. And yeah, Patty Mu is also awesome. She writes a newsletter, Rabbit Holes, and just also shares a bunch of interesting links. I'm very interested in the intellectual side of things. So the curators that I'm drawn to are just, you know, people that are less interested in sharing like the news or facts of the day, but really like the ephemeral, amazing content. And that, you know, on the internet. So the people for me would be people like the ones I mentioned. Within the startup community, there are amazing people that I've discovered, like Keely Adler is an example. And interestingly, and I think it like proves the thesis that curators are a new class of creators, because a lot of curators that are really good at sorting through the noise of the internet don't really feel like they have a home on the internet. Like arguably, if you're a visual curator, like maybe, you know, Instagram has been really good to you. But if you're just like interested in specific fields and knowledge and you're reading a lot, there's not a lot of places where you could feel at home on the internet. And hopefully Startupy can become that place. And I've certainly discovered a lot of people that I feel like have a lot to share and contribute, but don't really have a home where they can do that.
How do you think monetization should play in compensating for curation? Seems very clear with content creation, but I don't know if there's been a precedent that's been set for curation.
Yeah, it's honestly, I lose sleep over this question because I don't know. In some ways, I think there is willingness to pay for curation. In fact, I actually, when I had my Airtable database and my Substack, first thing I did was say like, hey, I'm going to go on a journey to building this company. I'm going to, if you join me on this journey, but like pay $180 is I think what I was charging, you'll get access to my Airtable database. And like, you know, you're just going to be a part of this journey as I figure this out. And, I think I ended up making about $100,000 from that. Whether it was people interested in the journey or the content itself, like, I don't know, but I do think there's willingness to pay for curation. On the other hand, I think that people curate for their own personal utility. So it's not like people, if there are things that like people need a monetary incentive to do, but I think curation is not one of them. Like people will continue to curate no matter what, because they do it for self-expression, they do it for identity, they do it for their own utility. And so, is there like a business model around like maybe like a Substack for curators specifically? Maybe, but I do think that curation is unique in that it would happen regardless. You know, and to some extent, like people also write for their own personal satisfaction, but you know, there's also this expectation that, it takes a lot of time. I sort of feel like, yes, curation takes time, but I sort of like do it passively as I'm already consuming the internet. And so, with just a little bit of extra effort, I can make that useful for others. Whereas, you know, I have a bunch of things that I want to write and share, but I haven't like carved out time to do that. And if I had a monetary incentive to do that, I'm more likely to get around to writing it. So those are just some of the thoughts in my head. But yeah, I don't know what the answer to that is. I think we're just going to have to like iterate our way to that answer.
And where do you think all this is heading? What is the future of curation?
Yeah, I honestly think that like, curation is not a new phenomenon. It's always existed. It's always been around us. I think that because of the like information explosion we're seeing on the internet, we just like need more of it. Like the level of self-education required to navigate the internet, the amount of frustration. It's crazy to me that we like live in the information age, and yet we feel like finding information is a more daunting task than it's ever been. And so I think that terms of like, what are the opportunities around that insight? I think there's all sorts of opportunities. There's, you know, for example, there's like this platform curated.com, which is an e-commerce platform, and it pairs you with experts as you're buying things like ski gear. And so that's like a, you know, pretty like novel form of curation. I think of a lot of the sort of cohort courses and the rise of like a lot of these like niche education offerings, like as a form of curation, a lot of like online communities. If you think of, I don't know, maybe like Launch House, if you're a founder, joining a community like that, it's a form of curation. It's saying like, there's so much that I need to do on the internet. There are so many people I could be in touch with. So I am just going to like choose this one place and trust that it's going to deliver what I need. And in some ways, I think curation is about the perception that you're making the right choice. It's not necessarily always the right choice, because in a world of infinite choice, it's not always like clear whether you are reading like the best book you could be reading, or using the best tool you could be using, or choosing the best hotel. But that perception that you're making the right choice comes from, I think, a lot of like these trusted curation environments. And so I think there's a lot to build. I think there's a lot to build, like in terms of like specific verticals, whether it's travel and food. I'm fascinated by curation as a whole. I think I'm such an avid sort of like reader and consumer of like knowledge on the internet, that I'm sort of like attacking this from the perspective of, if you wanted to search across like a wide range of topics in tech, business, personal development, culture, where could you get a curated list of like the highest quality reads? And that is like the problem that I am like compelled to solve.
I just love to end with our speed round. I'd love to know what you're reading, watching, listening to that's made your life better and brighter that you'd like to recommend to our listeners.
Yeah, well, let me see if I can give you a good answer to that. I think it's interesting because people would expect that because I spend so much time on the internet reading stuff that, you know, I am obsessed with like a specific blog or a specific person. And I think in some ways, this gets to a lot of the sort of like content discovery challenges that I see on the internet today, which is like today we often discover content based on the people that we follow or the publications we follow. And I think it should be the other way around. Like you should discover people based on the content they write. And so there's a lot of stuff on the internet that I've discovered that has been written by like someone who I don't like necessarily follow or have like any sort of real like are a part of my follow graph necessarily. So it's interesting that I there are certain things that I read religiously, but I don't have like my affinity is towards like really good content versus saying like here are like the three things that I read on a weekly basis. That said, things that I have read that have resonated. So I guess the book that I've read this year that's had like the most lasting impact on me is 4,000 Weeks by Oliver Berkman. So I highly recommend that. I love the Dense Discovery newsletter. I read that every week. I think Patty Moo is also an amazing curator, and her rabbit holes are always really great. And I discover amazing stuff through that. But honestly, yeah, there's a ton of stuff. Like if you go to like Startup-y and visit my profile, there are like, I've probably indexed like over 5,000-6,000 things that have resonated. I read a lot. The interface will be a lot better and more searchable over time. I also love a good interviewer. I think that actually having done a podcast, I did a podcast for the last few months, and I realized that asking good questions is really hard. And so I really appreciate Patrick O'Shaughnessy's Invest Like the Best podcast. I just think he's just like a master at pulling out the right things from his audience in ways that most people would have the same person in front of them and it would just be a radically different conversation. So I think the Invest Like the Best podcast is amazing. That's what I got.
If you want to connect with Sari, you can follow her on Twitter at Sari Azout. That's SARIAZOUT. Don't worry, we've put links to everything she's recommended in the Flipboard storyboard that you'll find in this show's notes. Big thanks to our audio team, Rosanna Caban and Anne Lay. If you want to find out more about Flipboard, where enthusiasts are curating stories they recommend across thousands of interests, download the app or head over to our website at flipboard.com. Anyone can be a curator on Flipboard. Simply create an account and start flipping to share your ideas with the world.